Network Automation Nerds Podcast. Hello and welcome to Network Automation Nerds Podcast, a podcast about network automation, network engineering, Python, and other technology topics. I'm your host, Eric Cho. Today, we're continuing our conversation with the host from Packet Pushers, Ethan Bank, and Drew Conner-Murray. We're talking about embracing change, but you know, I am so sorry. In the last episode, we just went all over the place. Although I thought those were very valuable content and very interesting to me, and I hope it was interesting to the listener. But last episode, I think we were just talking about the changes that we experienced and kind of the progression of podcasts overlay on top of that topic, the change topic, right? Like the changes in the industry. Why do we think that is? And some of our personal feelings about meritocracy, shall we say. So this episode, I think we should start with what are some of the technology change that you think is, there's so many of them, but in my mind, there's one that stood out from them, but I will be very interested in hearing your thoughts on Drew on, you know, what is the technology change that stood out in your mind that just, I don't know, one change that ruled them all.
I guess if we're just sort of leaving out the internet as the one change, because I was born before the internet.
me too.
Yeah. But setting that aside, thinking about, you know, maybe sort of the last 10, 15 years, I feel like I'm going to put my money behind virtualization. Okay. So whether we're talking hypervisor, containers, whatever, multi-tenancy to me is, I think, a core technology that has enabled all kinds of stuff that's happening now.
Yeah, that's a major one for sure. What about you, Ethan?
Well, if you look at the context here, is biggest change in technology over the last 10 or 15 years, I think, right? That's what was in the show notes. So that's what I was thinking about as I was getting ready for this.
Yeah, go for it.
And for me, I'm going to take a little bit of a departure from infrastructure and talk about something that I think has affected us within tech, but then also society as a whole. And that is the rise of ubiquitous smart screens, because we got them everywhere, Eric. They're on we got phones, tablets, watches, TVs, our monitors, of course, whether that's laptop or whatever. Headsets now, VR headsets, more and more of a thing. They're in our cars. They're on personal assistant devices. It's not just, you know, hey, robot lady, you know, do the thing for me. Now there's screens on some of these devices as well and more. And I raise that because I think it's fundamentally changed how we behave and how we think and as people, how our brains work. Since most of our engagement with the world is mediated by a screen now, and all of these screens are internet connected, that's our gateway for information. It's everything we look at for entertainment, and we seem to be addicted to them, or maybe more accurately, we're addicted to the brain chemicals that make us feel good when we get a like on social media, or we watch a little short video on TikTok or on YouTube. We scroll through a shopping site and hit that buy button. You know, all that stuff is like this addictive behavior that changes, again, fundamentally who we are as people, how we interact with each other, how we interact as a society. And there's so many articles and stories about we're less happy as human beings. We're lonely. We're outright depressed. Depression and treatments for depression are just a very popular topic to discuss that. We become fragmented into these isolated groups. We got these increasingly extreme or unique or specific viewpoints about the world because we're in our little group, you know, talking about things. Taking it back to us as technology professionals, that with that context, I think we as people can't focus like we used to be able to focus. It's harder for us to like read a book for hours at a time. I used to be able to do that, man, like studying for a cert. I could just sit and grind and study a book and then write about it and then do lab exercises and go. Like that was my Saturday back when I was studying for the CCIE. That was how I spent 10 to 12 hours a day was doing that stuff. Now it's hard to imagine that. I mean, I can't even sit through a 2-hour movie without having to pull my phone out because, oh, this scene's moving a little slow. Let's see what's happening on Insta. You know, you got to scroll, you know, fill in what little blank you had there, even though I'm looking at this TV in front of me, glorious 4K color. It's beautiful. The acting's amazing. And the soundtrack is top notch. And I got bored for half a second. Let me grab my phone. That says something about the way my brain works now that's different from the way it used to. I don't know. everybody was talking about digital minimalism a couple of years ago. You remember that? That was a thing, that topic that kept coming up. Digital minimalism. Oh, we're going to go from smartphones back to dumb phones and all this stuff. Well, I think there's a reason for that, even though we're not talking about digital minimalism so much anymore. You know, I think it's because it's we're recognizing that it's breaking our brains, that we're addicted to whatever the chemicals are in there. Dopamine, I gotta hear that. That's one of them that comes up. I'm not the science guy for that stuff to remember all the chemical names that are supposedly making us addicted to our phones and so on. But I think it's stealing our ability to focus. And if you're a technology professional, you've got to be able to focus to grow your skills usefully. If you want to learn Kubernetes, it's a complex product. It takes a lot of time and hours of reading, studying, and working with the product to get there. If you want to learn VXLAN EVPN, there's a lot going on. Maybe you've never worked with BGP before. You got to start there just to get in the door and be able to actually deploy VXLAN EVPN. The focus that's required for that is extraordinary. And to be good at it, our brains aren't wired to do that anymore because we rewired them with all of our stupid smart screens that we love desperately because they're colorful and awesome and give us that immediate chemical release in our brain that makes us happy. So that's the thing that I see, Eric, that's the change for the last 10 to 15 years that has just fundamentally transformed things.
Yeah, like Drew, I was born before the internet was there. I mean, I remember dial up and say, hey, mom, stay off the phone. I got to go do this research work, right? but yeah, no, I agree with what you're saying, especially after I had kids. I didn't realize how much it had fundamentally changed us until I start to observe my kids on how they behave. And because, you know, initially we were very strict about having screen times and the kind of screen that they use. Yep. But, you know, since COVID, that just all gone through the window. And once you go down that slippery slope, you're not coming back. Yep. So now I observe them with a shorter attention span, like you said. And if I compare that back to, you know, what I used to do, like you, Ethan, like I used to study a long stretch of time on, you know, CCIE in particular, but also technology, just labbing it up for hours and lose myself in that flow. And I desperately want to get that back for my kids, but I just don't know how because there's so many distractions. And even if I prohibit her from, you know, taking a mobile phone to school, the math teacher would you know, say, you know, I hope the math teacher is not listening, but the math teacher would say, oh, everybody just take out your phone and take a picture of the screen, right? Like maybe he has some formulas or schedules and she will be the only person who writing down on the, you know, desperately trying to scramble it down 30 seconds on paper. And everybody, I would just take your phone and take a snapshot. So I don't want to put her in that disadvantage. But at the same time, I realized everything that you talked about, Ethan, on, you know, the shorter attention span. So I don't know. So, I mean, so I guess, you know, there's two sides of things that change brought, right? Like there's the advancements on the convenience of having a supercomputer in your pocket nowadays that's always connected. And the downside for that is maybe now you train your brain to have shorter attention span, and now you have to go back to a dumb phone. So I don't know. I mean, what do you think, Drew? I mean, is there any downsides to, I don't know, hypervisor and virtualization, like that change that you talked about?
Well, if I come back to that, I didn't know where Ethan was going. So now I feel like I should change my answer. Because
I know, right? Like he gave such a good answer. I'm like, oh my God, I got to put on my philosopher hat there and talk about the macro changes.
but I, just that one thing I want to mention is that I think humans, as we've, you know, starting in the Industrial Revolution, have kind of grappled with this phenomenon for decades. And every new technological advance that emerges is sort of like, this is the end of civilization and the end of our ability to behave as, you know, sort of rational functioning humans. It happened with novels. I was reading some Thoreau a long time ago, back when I could sit down long enough to do that. And he said something to the effect of, a man can't take a nap for 15 minutes without waking up to say, what's the news? And he was complaining about the telegraph having closed the gap between countries and stuff. Like, so if he's up in arms about the telegraph, I think he would probably have a heart attack about smartphones. But the broader point is that we as a civilization have sort of encountered this. We've coped with it. We've figured out how to deal with it. kids have been okay. Like, you know, my mom was alive for the transition from radio to television, and she's a perfectly well-functioning human being. I'm the transition from television to internet. I think I'm a perfectly, at least a moderately functioning human being. So
you're good. You're
yeah, I'm okay. and I do, like, I have kids and I'm worried about their use of it, but they're now young adults. They're in college and holding down jobs and seem to be able to do those things. So I definitely share Ethan's concerns and your concerns, and I'm sure a lot of other people out there have them. I worry about it too, but I also think people adapt, people figure it out. And as long as we can, I think hopefully in the end we'll be okay. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great way. And now I worry less, right? Like, thank you for helping me sleep at night a little bit better.
Just, this is okay, not parenting advice. Do not give a cell phone to your 2-year-old. But,
No, we're not financial advisors and we're not like parenting, right. You know, counselors or anything like that. Yeah. No, but totally. I think just like I said, I think just preparing for this week's episode and all the topics and just this word change just bring out so much emotions. And you could start at the very macro level on, and you know, about society, about culture, like what we just did there, or you could be at the very minimal level on what to eat for breakfast. And now I have a multiple ways to get food delivered to my door, and you know, like in the multiple culture of kind of food that's like readily available in the 5 miles radius. So I think those are just such a big topic. And I think that's kind of reflected in our two episodes today, where we just kind of discuss all over the place, which I definitely enjoy. And I hope it's useful for the listener as well. Do you have any other examples of the changes that you think that are important or that just comes into your mind when, you know, preparing for this week's episode?
Well, I guess if we want to touch on the virtualization thing that I brought up, that is a very weak second to Ethan's, but I feel like
definitely weak third, but go ahead.
I brought it up because I was thinking my first answer was, you know, public cloud, but yeah. Then I was like, but without multi-tenancy, public cloud wouldn't have existed to the extent that it does today. Software as a service wouldn't have been capable because of that ability to run that, the multi-tenancy where you can shard out that infrastructure multiple ways to maximize its use. Without that innovation, we wouldn't be in the environment we are today. That's why I picked it.
Yeah, I agree. I think, go ahead.
Yeah, well, there's another piece of that too, which is, has to do with scale in my mind. If yep. you don't have virtualization, you don't get distributed scaling. You don't get the ability to scale out. You're stuck in that world of scaling up forever, which doesn't. You can't. You hit limits there. So so much of what the world does now is operate at massive scale, or you need to be able to meet that peak because you peak once a year during Black Friday if you're working for a retailer. Maybe, you know, that's a thing.
And just imagine the amount of data center infrastructure we'd need if everybody had to have their own, like if AWS was running individual hardware for every customer. The power consumption, the land consumption, the resource consumption would be unsustainable.
Yeah, I think what I was going to say was that's exactly to your point. That's how AWS was started, right? Because Amazon was trying to build for Q4, where, you know, the majority of their business, or back then, was between Thanksgiving to Christmas, mm-hmm. and they have to build to peak, and you know, then the rest of the three quarters was just sitting idle. And that is where you know, Mr. Bezos said, well, you know, if we have these resources, how do we make it available for people? Mm-hmm. And that's how AWS was the concept of AWS was launched, or so the story told, right? I mean, I was there, so I totally bought onto that idea of AWS existed because of Amazon's overbuilding the capacity. And then you work backwards on, okay, if that's our goal, is to extend this to the rest of the world and be a utility computing, what do I need to do today to get to that? And that is when, you know, Mr. Werner Vogel comes in as the CTO and say, okay, everything needs to be API driven, no backdoor. I don't care if you have like the super duper database that needs super duper access, you're still going to go through a public interface that eventually we're going to expose to to the outside world. And that is how, I mean, that process started years before S3 was launched, right? Like they have to go through that change in order for S3 to come back. And that's why I think some of the later cloud providers, when they launched, you know, we being, you know, at AWS at the time, we were very nervous because of the branding power. But then we look back at the history on how long it took us to do that. And we said, if they don't have that pedigree, if they didn't go through the same pain and learning curve that we went through, it's going to be an uphill battle for them to catch us. So even though AWS was small at the time, you know, and we, of course, we did our best to fend off the competition, launching features and all that. But at the same time, that process started many, many years ago. And it started with the multi-tenancy that you talked about. And people, I don't know if people remember, it was a real doubt in the beginning on how the Xen hypervisor could perform, like the VMs could perform to a bare metal. It was a real question on whether they could be on par with that, right? Like, there was a real question on the CTO or the CIOs of the world and say, should we have a thing that we, you know, could take ourselves because it has a higher performance? And that is a lot of time, that's where we struggle with in the early days, is to convince people that it's secure enough. That was usually the first question. And then the second question is, you know, what's the performance, right? Like if I have this web server that takes, you know, thousands of requests per second, how can I trust you that, or how can I trust you that you're not going to favor Amazon over my tenant, right? Like, so all of these questions started there, but it's back to our topic about changes, right? Like these are the things that you realize you cannot control the customer's perception. So now you can only control your things, like whether you provide more data, whether you increase your, you know, isolation, like VPC. VPC wasn't always there. People, you know, might take it for granted nowadays, but initially it was all just VMs, yours and you know, you don't know who your neighbors is, right?
That's right.
But yeah, you know, that just brought back so much memories. And I do agree that the cloud and multi-tenancy and hypervisor virtualization, that is one of the biggest change. And that was my even weaker answer, Drew, that I prepared.
I didn't think it was weak at all. We just got outplayed by Ethan.
Level. But well played, Ethan. I mean, I thought that was a much better answer on, you know, just to bring it into a more macro level.
Well, thank you. I'm glad we had a thought-provoking discussion on that. Now, the question is, what do we do about it, I guess? Because that's, I brought it up, honestly, because it's like, I see these changes in myself and it bothers the heck out of me. It's like, why can't I sit here and just read this document before I got like, squirrel, got to go do something else?
Yeah.
Oh, and I've been frustrated by that. And I've been trying to get back to, I need to be able to focus. I need to be able to read. Okay, here's a 95-page report on Google on the state of DevOps 2023. I want to read this monster. Forced myself to read it today. It wasn't without temptation to like, I'm going to check Slack. I need to go into the kitchen for a reason.
Oh, I'm sorry. That was me. That was me this morning. Man. Like, hey, Ethan, I even CC you on it, right? Like, that's why that alerts comes directly in.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, I think that's a great point though. So how do we get back into something? I mean, we were taking all the benefits, but how do we get rid of the negative world? In our perception, the negative aspect of it. I don't know. I mean, for me, I don't know about digital detoxing. I mean, I've tried it. It didn't really work for me. I mean, I even changed my phone to like Grayscale, which did.
Oh, I tried that for 3 seconds and I was like, nope, can't do it.
Yeah. That even for emails, like that wasn't too appealing, but for me, you know, I try to, that's why I'm such a big fan of Atomic Habit. And by the way, they're not like sponsors or James Clear doesn't know who I am, but I am a big, big fan of the book Tiny Habits as well as Atomic Habit. It's just built habits into your daily routine. Like if I, you know, whenever I start that Pomodoro, that I know I now build into a habit where I just kind of leave everything behind and try to do that 25 minutes of focus time on that particular task. I don't always succeed, but that's one way of me trying to, you know, get back some of that attention that I lost. I don't know if you guys have any tips or tricks on of such things.
The big thing for me is just notifications. Just shut them off. Like, basically, you can shut all of them off. You actually don't need to have notifications for anything. And then you can batch your checking of social media. You know, if you've got LinkedIn notifications turned on, you're insane. No, don't do it. Just especially if you're interactive on LinkedIn. You post, and then there's so many levels of notifications on LinkedIn, especially if you leave it at default, you get buried in them. You don't want that percolating up through your OS and disrupting you, or becoming an icon that the thing on your phone tells you how many notifications you've got on the over the app icon. And you can do the same thing for email and for any other social that you're on, and pretty much anything except for like rare exceptions. I have notifications turned on in case someone from my family texts me. If my phone rings from a known number in my contact list, I get notified for that. That's almost it. I mean, I have Slack. I'm still experimenting with Slack. I've been trying to shut them off completely. And I think I'm at the point where it's like, yeah, actually I can. I think I can just shut them off. I still haven't turned on for DMs. But as I'm beginning DMs, it's like, good to know, not time sensitive. I didn't need to react to that right then. And so notifications is the big thing. And that's not new, right? I mean, I think a lot of people that have talked about trying to get better control over their brain functioning, their brain pattern, have learned to shut notifications off and get back some of that squirrel aspect. So you have better control and better focus. You're not distracted, and you're not... Sometimes leaving notifications on is an excuse for distraction. I'm going to leave them on because then I got a reason to go away from whatever I'm doing and go get that brain chemical hit by seeing the thing that I get from clicking on the notification for whatever it is. There's other things too, Eric, but that's the biggest one for me. My notifications lately have been going down and down and down, and I'm at the point of, I actually don't think I need any.
Yeah, I don't know if other phones allow you to do it, but at least for the iPhone, you're able to turn off notification, but have something that pierces through it. Like, say, I will always want to hear about, you know, things that, you know, the milk that my wife wants me to pick up. May not be super urgent, but I do want to know about it, right? So, like, you could always have these, I guess, you know, like how we say, like, pierce through the firewall, right? Like, just so you put up that firewall rules that deny all, but hey, permit this. So back to our network engineering, nerding out on that. But so that's a great tip. Do you have any tips that you want to share, Drew, on how do you get that attention back?
I think the thing that helped me the most was I basically stripped down my phone. I took Reddit off. I don't have Facebook on there. I don't have any social media apps. The only thing I have on there, like, that could be even a tiny bit distracting is the NPR app. And if I'm really bored, then I'm like, well, I'm just going to read this measured news article about something that happened, you know, at a meeting between two world powers. Okay. And then I'm like, well, maybe that 95-page article from Google on Kubernetes is worth going back to reading. So just like, I found myself when I had like something like Reddit on my phone, that it was in my face all the time. And I was just scrolling and scrolling and scrolling, like Ethan said, for that hit of novelty, even though 99% of the stuff was just crap. So stripping that off my phone was the best thing for my attention.
Yeah. A funny, I guess, fact was the author of Tiny Habit. I think he came to his fame because he taught the two of his students went on to found Instagram, and they took all the findings that, like, you know, like how do you get the dopamine hit, and then the attention, and how do what attracts people.
He was like,
right?
What have I done?
Yeah, exactly. Like random rewards. Yeah, all of these lessons that they took, and then they said, how do we codify it, make it an app? And that became like Instagram. So he openly talked about it, right? Like he just said, okay, I want to write this tiny habit book so that, you know, perhaps people could build, you know, more habits that are, you know, what they correct bad habits and get good habits and so on and so forth. So back to what you were talking about. But it's interesting that you mentioned NPR, right? Because I want to sanitize my feed as well. Mm-hmm. And being, I don't know, 20 plus year media guy, do you have any suggestions? Obviously, this is totally outside the realm of what we're supposed to talk about today, but please share that knowledge with us. Like, what's your thought on that?
I mean, I guess I feel like I am a news junkie and a politics junkie. So I feel like NPR is the one that I know people think it has a liberal bias. I disagree with that, and we could have an entire other podcast about that. But I feel like it is the most news-focused, information-focused of the news providers. And also, I love radio. I love audio. So I'm also a listener. So I think that's just was like, I want to help them out. So I put their app on my phone too. But I think I do feel like it's actually trying to provide information as opposed to just keep you constantly engaged with whatever product they have.
Yeah, I agree. And I am biased as well. They're the only news organization that I trust for unbiased or as unbiased as possible of the news. And they're the only news org that I donate to. So yeah, as you know, Ethan, right? Like, you know, we talked about how I, all of the royalties from the first two editions of the book are donated to the nonprofit. And the only media company within that nonprofit list was the NPR, and you know, not CNN, not MSNBC or any other. Definitely not that news channel starts with the F and rhymes with an
box,
animal.
Yes.
Yeah. rhymes with box.
Yeah. I don't know. You can take this metric for what it's worth, but it's one of the few media properties that after I interact with it, I don't come away feeling like furious or depressed or outraged or in some other way emotionally like must charged. Keep going.
Right. All right. Totally agree. Back to that hustle point thing, right? Like a lot of times you watch that video and go, okay, I'm going to run through walls and I'm just going to pull an all-nighter or study that BGP or EVPN. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, consistency is king. Like you just have to build good biased opinion. Build good habits, set that Pomodoro, do that every day. And at the end of the day, you just be a little smarter than yesterday, like what Charlie Munger said, right? Like if you just do that long enough, if you live long enough, you're going to reap the benefits on that. On that, another happy thought. I think this is a good point to kind of end this episode. Again, I am super excited. The reason you guys are on, because I'm moving my stream to Packet Pushers. It's going to start on the first week of March. So it should be March 6th, 2024. Yes. And yep. I definitely look forward to working closer with you guys.
Well, yeah, you know, thank you. Having your content hosted by Packet Pushers, it's an honor for us, Eric.
The pleasure is all mine. So thanks again for being here. Where can people find you on your content to follow you? Ethan, where can people do that?
Yeah, packetpushers.net is the best place. LinkedIn, if you'd like to be social, I will post briefing summaries and ask questions and crowdsource information and so on LinkedIn. I try to be active over there at least a couple of times a week. And that's it, Eric.
Yeah, he's not hard to find. Come on now. Like we're in 2024 now. You can find Ethan for sure. What about you, Drew?
Yeah, you can find me at packetpushers.net. I'm also on LinkedIn and I'm on Blue Sky at Drew_CM. If you want to go follow me there, we're looking to build a good IT community over at Blue Sky. So come check it out.
Great. And of course, we'll have all those links in the show notes. Thank you for listening to the Network Automation Nerds podcast today. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify. Well, actually, rewind that.
Yeah, hold on a second, Eric.
Yeah, hold on a second. You know, please find the future episodes on packetpushers.net. And you should be able to see, you know, amongst the 8 different streams on Network Automation Nerds. Obviously, we're going to have the new links to the new home in the show notes. Again, I'm very excited for this next step. And I thank you, listeners, for listening and follow us up to this point. Please do continue to support the show and support Packet Pushers. Like I said, these guys are the ones who inspired me to start the podcast, and I couldn't be more happier to continue this path on this team. And until next time on Packet Pushers, bye-bye.